This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Hezril. And we are just about to move on to our next story, which is going to be about how we tell stories, basically, or rather how we tell political narratives. This is based off of an article actually from a few weeks ago from the Malaysian Insight, which focused on the messaging that's coming out of Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad's Pejuang Parti.
Yeah, so voters and analysts were quoted saying that Tun M should change his tune, specifically his attacks on Datuk Seri Najib Razak. They said that although it worked well in G14, the narrative just doesn't resonate as well with many voters today.
Yeah, so lots of reasons for this, right? Not least Datuk Seri Najib's guilty verdict. So I think for many people, that story is sort of done and dusted. And the political situation has evolved greatly since the last general elections. I don't even want to begin to talk about how many Lanka hotels there have been. So there is that.
Yeah, and of course, Setsadik Muda was in the spotlight for its own set of messages just last week. They started the hashtag Pause Malaysia, calling for everyone to stop politicking until the country overcomes COVID-19. So while it did gain some traction, it also drew a lot of backlash from people who called it impractical and unrealistic. Party sources revealed that they felt it wasn't fleshed out properly before it went public.
Yeah, and tomorrow we're actually going to be talking about Gerak Malaysia, which is a group of five NGOs who have come together to essentially say that they want to field 20 independent candidates as MPs. And the idea here is that these would be candidates that aren't beholden to the old system, right, to any particular parties, yep, and will instead be loyal to their constituents and not engage in party hopping, so on and so forth. So we're going to be diving into that tomorrow. But with all these moving parts, we thought that it was a good time to look at this idea of, if you are a political party, especially a new and emerging one, how can you communicate? You know, how can you best find the message to land on and talk to the public? So we spoke with Jahabar Sadiq, editor at the Malaysian Insight, last week. We are going to bring you that conversation right after this. But talk to us. I mean, how do you think political parties are doing right now in terms of communication? Is there anyone that's particularly speaking to you? Why not? Call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
It's 7:46. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Hezril. We're talking now about how political parties and initiatives can communicate effectively. What is the best way to go about this? If you have any thoughts on this, specifically how well different parties are doing, what you might like to see, you can call 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. We are going to be crossing over to Jahabar Sadiq, editor at the Malaysian Insight. We actually spoke to Jahabar late last week, but we thought it was relevant to do now. So Jahabar, in the lead up to GE14, the messages that resonated the most were linked to corruption and cost of living. As a political observer, what themes or messages would work today?
Well, I guess it would be governance. I think voters will have to decide between the government elected in 2018, that's the Pakatan Harapan government, their handling of the economy, particularly national unity, and also general well-being of the country, particularly on the youth and their future. Because the current government, which came in on March 1st, as you know, wasn't elected. They were selected because the Prime Minister was selected by the King, and he then selected his cabinet. And so their only claim to fame is that they came in March 1st at the start of COVID-19 lockdown, which they implemented. And it'll be how they've handled the economy, how they've handled the pandemic itself, and going forward, how they're going to handle things like national unity and future of the youth in the country. So I think that will be the main arbiter of what people are looking at when they vote in the next government.
Right, and among many parties, a new one that's come under scrutiny is Pejuang. What's their selling point to voters?
Well, I think you look at the history of Pejuang, it's formed by Dr. Mahathir, with his son, Nukris Mahathir, and they were formerly from Bersatu, and before that they were in UMNO. So when they left UMNO, sometime after the last, the previous election, in 2013, 2014, they had campaigned on anti-corruption, anti-kleptocracy, and they stood in areas where the most of the voters were, how do you say, of the economic and urban centers of the country, mainly rural folks. So they won based on the fact that these voters had a choice of choosing either a man who has brought a lot of progress to the country from the time he was prime minister in 1981 and made them slightly prosperous along the way, and a man who was accused of taking a lot of money which was meant for the people. And so that is the background of the 2018 elections. Going forward, Dr. Mahathir saw his party being stolen away from him, so to speak. And now he has set up a new party, which I presume it will get registered and approved sooner than later. And he is apparently still going on the same campaign of anti-kleptocracy. Now, will that work? To a certain extent, I think you need to see who his audience is. As previously as in 2018, his audience is mainly rural people, rural voters in the Malay heartland. And as you know, that constituency, that area is always dominated by Malay-centric parties such as UMNO, such as PAS, to some extent AMANA, but definitely not by PKR. So you got to see that he's telling a message for a certain kind of demographic. And it's hard to say whether it'll work, because it did work in the 2018 elections.
And at the moment then, how closely is Pejuang's message tied to Tun M? In some senses, I guess, is he essentially the party?
Yes, he is essentially Pejuang, if you look at it that way. It's just as he was essentially at Bersatu too, when they went for elections in 2018. You have to do remember that in Malaysia, that personalities play a very important role in shaping the image and brand of any political party in our country. I can give you, for example, UMNO, under any prime minister, any president, most of party president, is shaped by the outlook of the president. You know, when it was Tunku Abdul Rahman, it was about independence for Malaya and then a wider Malaysia. And then for Tun Razak, it was about development. And then Hussein On was seen as a man of unity for the brief moment that he was prime minister. And then Mahathir Mohamad was seen as the great father of development for the country, economic development, transformation in his 22 years in power. And then Abdullah Badawi came in very briefly. He was seen as the guy who could undo some of the excesses that Dr. Mahathir did. And then naturally it came to the son of the father of development, Najib Razak, whose term was mired in all kinds of controversy. And that too shaped how UMNO was perceived by the public. You know, in 2018, the voters did not just throw out Najib Razak, they threw out UMNO too in many of the seats, traditional seats that they won, especially in their home state of or their birth state of Johor. So every party is also shaped by the personalities that headed or give birth to it. I mean, DAP with Lim and Kapal Singh's family, for example, PAS with all their top gurus and ulama. So it's always shaped by the personality who creates it and then who leads it.
And based on what's been put out in recent weeks, do you think Pejuang's messaging is working?
So this is how it is, right? I think Pejuang's messages is possibly working in areas where they're strong, which is rural areas. It's not working at all in urban areas because, you know what, he never stood in those areas, even when he was Bersatu too, right? His party, whether it is Pejuang, whether it's Bersatu, whether it's UMNO, has always stood in rural areas, in the heartland, in the hinterland. So, and among them, the messaging is very simple. You know, there's nothing complicated about, you know, science and tech and everything. Everything is about the welfare of the people and how they can be prosperous if they, A, work hard, B, vote in a government that will take care of them, and C, have leaders who are trustworthy. And I think that kind of messaging, those kind of values do not lose any attraction to voters in rural areas, except for the fact that most of Malaysia is becoming more urban, not just physically, but also in outlook. So Dr. Mahathir might find himself appealing to a shrinking demographic, so to speak. But nonetheless, still a very interesting and what I like to say, a very crucial and key demographic in our country, because that demographic are the ones who consistently go out to vote, unlike people in urban areas who, you know, because they are transient in nature, might not be interested or have no stake in the game, so to speak, when elections come around the corner.
So Pejuang isn't the only new kid on the block. Muda, for instance, recently registered itself as a new political party. I guess, you know, on a basic level, what are some important things for new parties to get right when it comes to communicating their identity, beliefs and principles?
I think the great thing about the 21st century is that a lot of people are very dependent on the internet, or very dependent on social media to reach out to people, to either crowdsource their political philosophy or outlook or plans, and communicate with people in a very, how do I say, anonymous way, you know, in a very socially distanced way. I think what Malaysia needs, politicians who actually put boots to the ground, go out and meet people and engage them. Because you got to remember, we are one of the strangest Asian communities around. We are not vocal. We are not expressive. We are shy about expressing our views, our opinions, our wants and our desires. We are a country where we talk in doublespeak. We use shadow play, satire at times from a long time ago to tell stories and to give and put forward our opinions and our viewpoints about what's going on in the country. Because A, we are too polite, and B, because we are scared of the repercussions of being a tall poppy and standing up and telling it as it is. So we are that kind of society. And with the internet, with social media, you will get a double layer of people speaking double speak, and so the message will get garbled. And the response too will be something else. It'll be a case of, how do you call it, Chinese whispers, right? Things get garbled and change along the way. Meanings are totally mutated. And that's what we have in Malaysia. I think politicians, no matter their age, should really go to the ground and be community organizers and go and meet the people they say they represent and get their views and help them shape their philosophy and policies on things. Because at the end of the day, what are politicians? Nobody forces them, puts a gun to their head and says, you know, you be my MP, you be my lawmaker. No, I mean, they do it on their own volition because they're ambitious for power, for a lot of things in life, for position. So if they claim to represent people or they want to represent people, I think the first thing they need to do is really go to the ground, whether it's Muda, whether it's Pejuang, any of the old parties too, Bersatu for that matter, they all win on the fact that they either personalities from previous parties or because the voters think, you know, I like the logo of this party and I think they can do good, or the president used to be Dr. Mahathir, so, you know, he's a good guy, or, you know, he promises his wealth. You can't rest on your laurels. You can't rest on the past. You need to really shape people's future by going and engaging them.
And speaking of people and their future, what issues do you think political parties should be prioritizing right now?
I think one is the economy, and two, the future of the country. These are two things which is very important for a trading nation like Malaysia. We are 33 million people. More than half are young people who are either entering universities this year or graduating in the last year or so, and the next 1-2 years. You have a pandemic ahead of that you're going through right now, and an economy which is susceptible to lockdowns we are in a middle-income trap. So what can we do? How can we guarantee a better future, not just for us, but for our young ones? So any government that just hums along and says, we're just going to lock you down until a better time comes. Don't worry, we'll use some money, or I'll ask the banks to use some rebates and all that. That doesn't work. You want something concrete for the next 5 to 10 years. A country that's known for its Malaysia plans, you know, which is very communist in nature, but we're known for a centrally planned economy, has no plan now. It's not nimble enough to figure out what to do for the next 6 months, next 1 year, next 5 years, what to do with any money you can get from oil or any money you can get from any kind of taxes it raises, say on gloves or palm oil and all that. So you need a government, you need political parties who can articulate a plan in the next 1-2 months and then you know, expound on it as we go for election.
Jahaba, thank you so much for speaking with us today. That was Jahaba Sadiq, editor of the Malaysian Insight, talking to us about how parties can better communicate to the people what they're about. And this is important because for the first time in a while, we're seeing so many new parties and initiatives pop up. Unlike, I guess, the parties that we've been seeing for the last 60 years odd. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.